South Africa's in a new era and there are lots of new voices. Well, a not such new voice is Gareth Cliff. He's been around for a quarter of a century, but my word, is he having an impact nowadays. We're going to be finding out from Gareth where his inspiration comes from and, well, what he thinks about the new. Pity they didn't call it wildebeest. Hey, new is a very kind of Eurocentric word, but gee, Gareth, it's good to be talking with you again. I've watched your entrepreneurial career with such interest, fascination, actually. If you recall the late John Kuhn and Alan Ford and yourself, you know, people know a lot about you, but I don't know if they remember or can recall that you were one of the internet pioneers with Get a Life, gagal.co.za.
You know, nobody except you would remember that, because I remember we pitched something to you, and you were one of the few people who got it at the point that we had started. This is way before Facebook and MySpace even. I think MySpace was maybe a thing in America, but it certainly wasn't in South Africa. We started a student portal, which would in effect give people a lot of the functionality that Facebook did. And we were probably about 7 or 8 years ahead of Facebook. And obviously the big .com crash happened and no one would touch anything that we were doing. But I'm so pleased you brought up John Kuhn. You know, he was a really good friend of ours. He died way too young at 26 years old. And between he and Alan and two other partners of ours, Nikki and Zander, we managed to, I think, do something really revolutionary. And it was exciting as hell. I mean, it didn't amount to any wealth or fame and fortune for us, but it certainly was an exciting project, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. If that was the beginning of an entrepreneurial journey, I'm extremely proud of it. Even though many people wouldn't even know it happened.
Oh, it was fantastic. I remember sitting in that boardroom at MoneyWeb, and I was really excited about partnering with you guys. I think you were you couldn't have been much older than 20 or 21, but you could see the opportunity. You could see that you guys could see these were guys who were going a long way. But unfortunately, I suppose I was outvoted. Unusually, it happens. But you did well. You built it up there. But your journey has gone from entrepreneurship and having your own platform, which is not easy in our industry at all, to really influencing people. And I want to get behind that, Gareth. Get an understanding of where your ideas come from. Because nowadays, you've been around a quarter of a century influencing people, but I wonder if they know what you read, what you think about, how your ideas have gotten shaped in the way that they have.
Well, I mean, you say a quarter of a century and it's terrifying, because it doesn't feel like that. And so much of what you just said about me could quite easily be part of your CV as well, and is. I mean, I remember when you started MoneyWeb. I remember when you abandoned that show on 702 and I ended up taking it up, and these poor people who were used to a smart, sensible guy who was giving them really, really interesting information about the economy and the captains of industry and all the really useful stuff, they were suddenly confronted with this 20-something lunatic whose entire purpose was to upset and offend as many of them as possible. But I hope that people do know a little bit about where I get my ideas and what I'm interested in, because, you know, it's been hours and hours behind a microphone, and you'd understand this better than anyone. I added up the other day that I've just in the time since we started Cliff Central, which was 2014, from there until now, I've probably done about 14,000 hours of interviews, of shows, of talk, without commercial interruptions, sport, news, traffic, weather, music, all the stuff we had on commercial radio. Add the commercial radio element to it, it's probably over 20,000. That's a lot of time. So I certainly hope I've shared enough about me. I read an enormous amount. I'm just curious about the world. I always have been. I think that is, to my mind anyway, when I meet other people, the mark of someone who's interesting and intelligent is how much they want to know, not how much they know. And I don't think there'll ever be a day where I look around and go, right, my brain is full, I've got enough. I'm eternally amazed and amused by all of the things that I pick up on. And you know, what we're going through in South Africa now, I found a precedent for this just the other day. There were two Ostrogothic kings, well, an Ostrogoth and a Visigothic king, called Odoacer and Theodoric, who came into an arrangement after a siege in Ravenna. This is obviously at the end of the fall of the Roman Empire, about 476. There wasn't a lot of good stuff going on then. But these two sworn enemies had to come to an arrangement where they would share power. And it made me think, God, you know, if you look around, there's a precedent for everything. You just have to be prepared to dig deep enough.
Nothing new under the sun, as we know from Victor Hugo. But what do you read? What kind of books, or do you actually watch podcasts or videos?
So I think because it's part of my job, and I enjoy it. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it in my spare time. But I listen to a wide variety of stuff, everything from current affairs programs to, you know, philosophical interviews. To I've been fortunate enough this year to meet two of my heroes in Douglas Murray, who's many people wouldn't even know it. I mean, he's probably one of the most brave and outspoken and intelligent people I've ever encountered. And I got to spend an entire week with him. I also got to meet the cleverest man I've ever met in person, a guy called Eric Weinstein. And you know, when you hang around with people like that, anything you're talking about, and we spoke about, you know, as Napoleon always said, from the sublime to the ridiculous, really deep and important and meaningful questions about the kinds of undertakings that humanity should be involved in at this point in our evolution and our development. And then also ridiculous things like, you know, Kevin Bloody Wilson, who's the Rude singer from Australia. And what amazes me is that I'm also fortunate enough to have interviewed, and I'm sure this is true for you as well, because you've got a show and because you've built up a kind of media personality and a presence, and you've got an audience who, thank God, still find me entertaining and interesting. I can coax almost anybody I want onto an interview, a recording. I can say I've got this show, and I do, and I can say how many listeners I have, and then they'll drop everything, whether they're a professor of applied mechanics at Harvard or a politician, and they'll come on the show and talk to me. So it feels sometimes like I've got a university just for myself. Of course, it isn't just for me, which is the pleasure of it. It's for so many other people who are listening. But I get to ask questions as if I were a student in each of their classes at a university that very few people on earth could afford. It's almost a mix between that and having a dinner party with the most amazing people you could invite from anywhere at any time, and having just these flowing conversations. So I'm very fortunate that I have real life experience with these people. I read an enormous amount only because I'm interested in so many things. A lot of it is history, because that is still, it's just the most enduring passion of mine. I'm just in love with all the stories that human beings have gone through already. And I think there's an enormous amount to be learnt from all of that. I listen to podcasts about silly things too. So there's an enormous amount of input that's coming in all the time. And I sometimes find myself frustrated that despite the fact that I've got all this time to talk to an audience, I still have so much I want to share because I'm taking in all this stuff, and then you need an output for it as well.
Douglas Murray is an interesting character. I loved his book about the death of Europe. It certainly opened my eyes to many things.
Aren't we seeing the direct result of his predictions and his concerns in that book? Aren't we seeing that now in France with Marine Le Pen? Aren't we seeing that now in Germany? Aren't we seeing in Austria and Hungary? I see Hungary has just taken the chair of the EU, or the presidency of the EU. I mean, we're entering a whole new era.
The thing that must frustrate you is you have all of this knowledge. You are sharing it so often, but it takes so long to move the needle in society. It doesn't. Take Douglas Murray as an example. When you read that book, it's very hard not to get his arguments. And yet he is regarded by many people as a bit of a cook, or certainly very right-wing, perhaps because they haven't taken the time to study anything of what he said.
Well, I mean, I feel like you get into a similar quandary when you talk to and I've seen our mutual friend Rob Herzog on your show so many times. I've seen other luminaries and people who are truly connected to what's going on in South Africa. And by the way, I mean, it's just terrific that we've got you in our arsenal of really reliable and serious people. And I don't mean serious as in serious boring. I mean serious as in more than just competent. Someone who's able to extract the useful answers out of their guests. It's okay. I'm not in a hurry. As you said, a quarter of a century, it's not my place to actually make the change. I'm fortunate enough to be able to influence things. I have, just as you do, contact with so many of the people who are in the thick of it. And while it can be annoying and sometimes dissuasive to have voices that you know are there just to be destructive and stupid, and who will often write you off just because you're a white male, especially in South Africa, there's so much noise online by just absolute imbeciles who are obsessed with their own and your race, with your lack of or your ownership of something and their lack thereof. It's just you can very quickly get sucked into a declining spiral, which I try to avoid as far as possible. I'll put out the stuff I do. I'll hopefully make a contribution in some way. I know that the audience who joins me, you know, every day or every second day for the show are getting something. Otherwise, they'd stop coming. So I don't need to do more than that. I'm not aiming for a political role for myself. I would never enter politics. I'm pleased to have a business that is working, that's creating value in that sphere. And I'm more than happy about the fact that I can bring some clarity to ordinary people who feel that so much of the mainstream media is letting them down too, that at least what I'm bringing them isn't propaganda and bullshit, and they can rely on that. And I'll never let them down on that front.
Mainstream media. If I have a look at your reach, if I have a look at how many people are following your work, I wonder who the mainstream media is nowadays.
Well, you know as well as I do that the temptation for so many of the legacy media outlets, whether it's, you know, the SABC, the big radio station groups, the old newspaper groups, the people who would want to proffer themselves as the guardians of truth, these people will take any opportunity they can get to say, oh, well, you know, Alec Hogg's just talking to this small coterie of people who think a certain way, who are of this ideological bent, who represent this form of elite capitalism or whatever it might be. They're always trying to undermine our audience, which is an audience that's chosen you. You didn't target market them. These are people who've decided, you know what, I'm going to spend a little bit of every day or week with Alec Hogg or with Gareth Cliff or whoever else. And there are lots of other brilliant people doing this, by the way, and the more the merrier. I'm not territorial about this. I'm not going to get into fights with people about who's the biggest or who has the most people listening, because then, you know, it's just a race to the bottom. I think what it is it's a huge threat to the people who've been the gatekeepers of this stuff for so long. You've come into conflict with them. I have. And certainly they are at their lowest ebb in terms of credibility right now. So I'd rather be me. And if people want to call me the new mainstream media, cool. We don't represent corporatism. We don't represent political interests. I'm not funded by any of that stuff. So, you know, whatever we're doing, if we're not doing it truthfully, we'll very quickly be found out, won't we?
Indeed, we shall. Gareth, just to go into this government of national unity, we've got some interesting people in the cabinet now. How do you rate them? You've met a lot of them. You've spoken with a lot of them. Do you think these are the people who are going to take us to the new age of prosperity for South Africa? Or are they going to have to upskill themselves quite dramatically to even get halfway?
Well, with all disrespect, I think politicians in general tend to be pretty basic people. And I think that there are exceptions to that rule. There are people who are genuinely pulled into service and who feel that politics is a place they can make, in a way they can make the most good things happen. They can bring about positive change. But those people are rare. I think most politicians are the sort of people who wouldn't be able to get a job in the real world. And they manage to find, because they're rent seekers and parasites, they manage to find a vein or an artery and they lock onto it and they just stay there as long as they can. And this isn't just true in South Africa. I think it's true in America. We see we've got Joe Biden hanging on by his fingernails, or his wife hanging on to him by her fingernails. Who knows? But it's happening all over the place. And there certainly has been, since the era of, I would say, pre and just post-World War II, there's been a lot of this performative politics too, where people have been putting on a show. Like, we look like leaders, we sound like leaders, we go to these meetings in Davos or at the G7, G8, G20, God knows how many others they're going to create. They're all talk shops where nothing important is done. And when it comes to actually making important decisions, they're all just vacuous, unimportant, and they're stooges, they're patsies for interests that are usually powerful lobbying interests in each of their countries. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but we can see that the Democrats in America have been held up by the media, by corporate interests, by a certain ideological interest group as well. And I wouldn't even say one, but many fragmented groups who've come together as a kind of coalition of, they would call themselves minorities and the disenfranchised and the victims. But actually, they're dictating policy, so they can't be countercultural. They're actually the culture. And in South Africa, I think that the ANC has had a 30-year run and people have found them wanting. And this government of national unity, to short circuit to your question, is the best possible outcome. I mean, I sent a message to someone 4 days before the election and I said, how about this? And I mean, I'll send it to you, but I wouldn't send it around to anyone else. They'll think I'm bullshitting, and I've typed it up in you know, post hoc. But I said pretty much that what we'd like is to have people like John Steenhuisen, Gayton McKenzie. I even brought the EFF into my original idea, which I wouldn't necessarily do now because they've behaved abominably. And I think that they're also probably the most destructive force to the economy that we have in politics at the moment. But I thought this would be the best possible outcome before it had happened. And I think a lot of people had considered the GNU, so it's not just me who would have thought of this. But I think what's great about it is that everybody, with the exception of the MK people, who really are only brought together by Jacob Zuma and by their admiration for him and by their feeling like they're outside the tent pissing in, they'll fall apart when Jacob Zuma dies or when he decides he doesn't want to do this anymore. So MK is not really a factor anymore. And the EFF are just, they're grumpy and they don't really want to run things. They want to be the noisy opposition. So that means everybody else in South Africa who wants to craft a future for their children, their grandchildren, for their friends and family, that wants to live in relative harmony with their, you know, compatriots, that wants to be able to pursue goals, dreams, and ideas, they have someone in that cabinet that they can say, well, that's our guy. You know, whether it's someone on the Patriotic Alliance front, whether it's someone in the Freedom Front Plus, whether it's the broad and competitive coalition of the DA and the ANC. I think it's terrific. And as I said to someone the other day, and you probably agree with me here, whatever the outcome is, the ANC can no longer do things on their own, which is good because they've proven that that is a route to corruption and to sluggishness and to inactivity and to very bad decision-making very often. So if they get things done now, that'll be 10 points better than we were at before. But if they're stuck in deadlock and they're constantly harassing each other for, you know, enough votes to do this and to do that, also great, because the less government we have in our day-to-day lives, the better. Most South Africans are not affected by government on a day-to-day basis. What we'd like is the streetlights to work, potholes to be fixed, jobs to be made available. In fact, that should be the first priority of any government. And I don't think you'll disagree with me if I say that growth should be the number one agenda item for all of these people, no matter who they are, what their ideology or what their bent is. And I think we've got a pragmatic group of people for the first time in a long time. Let's hope they can deliver. I'm optimistic, but cautious.
Competition. It's good in any field and certainly in politics as well. Just before we go, the very first edition of Cliff Central, I remember being in a hotel room in Omaha attending Warren Buffett's annual general meeting in 2014 and listening to you and being so proud of what you'd achieved already then just by getting on air. But Warren Buffett mentioned at one of those meetings that in Washington, and this kind of changed my head a lot, there are 30,000 lobbyists in Washington who are well paid, probably overfed, and they only receive income if they get things done, which means influencing politicians. And quite often people don't get that. And the point that you've made that politicians can be empty suits who are controlled from outside. What do you make of that in a South African context? Who are the people really pulling the strings here?
Well, if I were in the EFF, I'd say the markets, right? Because they see the markets as being this this room in which a bunch of, probably in their minds, white heterosexual males get together somewhere in Europe in a dark place and plot like the Freemasons or God knows what else, how to do things. What they don't realize is that the markets are the most complex machine humans have ever built. And there are so many millions and millions of things being put into that machine and being taken out, which is why it's never perfectly predictable. There are people who've managed to make a lot of money by placing bets on company X, Y, or Z or on country X, Y, or Z in their currency. But it's never a thing that you can completely predict the outcome of, which proves that it's not controlled by one or a small group of people. It proves, in fact, that it is the most collaborative and the most diverse and the most inclusive system ever developed. So when people attack the markets, it's just because they're completely stupid. They don't understand what the markets are. But I think that a lot of lefties in South Africa believe that the markets are a nefarious influence, that there are, you know, some group of people who get together and plot this, that, or the other. I think funding in politics is also a very complex and cloudy issue. It's misunderstood. If you were one of the, let's just say, hopeful and the word I'm looking for is confused people who might have backed like Rise Mzansi and wasted all that money on them. You kind of haven't, regardless of how much money you spent, you haven't got what you wanted. So there are nice safeguards here in that ordinary South Africans have kind of given this poison chalice to the government of, We want you to get together, because what it proves is that South Africans want to get together. They want to figure things out together. And this is, by and large, my feeling on the ground, is that the average South African, whether rich, poor, black, white, old, young, or any kind of ideological credo, they all want to come together and make the thing work. Because if the thing works, they can live in a better and more harmonious, a more prosperous place. If we can do that, and if we can give that message, which I think this election has done, loud and clear to our politicians, there really is no stopping us. And we're a great place to be right now. I wouldn't want to be stuck anywhere near Russia and Ukraine. I wouldn't want to be stuck anywhere near Gaza and Israel. I wouldn't want to be stuck with the choice that America is facing right now. And I love America. I'm a very pro-American and pro-European guy, generally. I'm also quite interested in what's going on in China and India in particular. But I want to be here because actually we're perfectly situated. We don't have any major, major enemies, and we don't have any friends that we can't say no to. We're so well positioned that if our economy took off and we were just conscientious enough to pay attention, put our noses to the grindstone for 5 to 10 years, paradise on earth. Honestly, couldn't be a better place to be. And I'm pleased to be doing business in this country.
And to be speaking truth to power, as always. Gareth Cliff, privileged talking with you. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.